This is KBOO Portland.
You're listening to KBOO's Catalog of Connections year-end campaign, where we bring you a range of community-oriented programming built by community members like you. Help KBOO reach our $75,000 goal by December 31st, so we can bring you another great year of cutting-edge radio made by you for you. Just go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321 to contribute today.
Tune in to KBOO every second Sunday of the month, 8 to 10 p.m. for Pacific Northwest Tunes, a show dedicated to showcasing our Pacific Northwest bands and musicians. That's Pacific Northwest Tunes every second Sunday of the month, 8 to 10 p.m. here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
Oh, I wish there's a mole in the ground. Oh, I wish there's a mole in the ground. If there's a mole in the ground, then I'd root the mountains down. Oh, I wish there's a mole in the ground.
Good morning and welcome to the Old Mole Variety Hour on KBOO Portland, your volunteer-powered, member-supported, nonprofit community radio station. I'm your host today, Fran Michelle, and on today's show, we hear about supportive housing services in the metro area and the business lobby's reluctance to pay their fair share. And we hear about colonialism from Turtle Island to Palestine and the need to free Leonard Peltier. We'll be hearing about connections and coalitions and collaborations, and this month is KBOO's Catalog of Connections year-end campaign, where we're giving the gift of grassroots community media. Please help us reach our goal of $75,000 before December 31st. You can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Today, we'll hear about the connections between neighbors and counties and what gets paid in taxes and what gets provided in services. I talk with Molly Hogan of the Welcome Home Coalition about the Metro Supportive Housing Services measure, what it is, what it has accomplished toward getting and keeping people housed, and what we need to do to keep it from being cut. Metro is considering a proposal to cut taxes on those making over $125,000 a year, which would of course mean less funding for supportive services and affordable housing. 60% of voters approved that 1% tax on very high income households and big businesses. Those taxes only apply to the wealthiest 7% of households and to businesses bringing in more than $5 million a year. The proposal also includes an extension to the ballot measure and other changes, but the tax cuts negotiated by the Portland Business Alliance, Portland Metro Chamber of Commerce, would reduce revenues by $17.5 million in the first year and more going forward. But if we keep the tax at the same rate and also make the tax permanent, we could develop long-term plans to invest in social housing. Also today, we'll hear a commentary from Desiree Hellegers about connections between the International Day of Solidarity with Palestinian People and the National Day of Mourning. She looks at the settler colonial simulacra of Thanksgiving and the urgency of calls for Joe Biden to free 80-year-old Dakota Lakota Anishinaabe political prisoner Leonard Peltier. As ever, you'll be able to find the podcast of this episode of the Old Mole Variety Hour and its segments on the KBOO app or on our website at kboo.fm/oldmolevarietyhour, where you can also find links to subscribe to our show, to contact us, and to support your listener-sponsored, volunteer-powered, nonprofit community radio station by clicking on the red Donate tab. Here's part one of my conversation with Molly Hogan. Good morning. I'm here with Molly Hogan, Executive Director of the Welcome Home Coalition, a multicultural and intersectional network founded in 2014 that brings together advocates and neighbors and many, many organizations with a shared vision of a future where everyone has a safe, affordable place to call home. Welcome Home uses education, research, training, and advocacy to advance housing policies that will move us toward housing justice. Molly is with me today to talk about Metro Council's plans for changes to the Supportive Housing Services measure that voters passed in 2020 and about Welcome Home's call to action on that. In particular, I'd like us to talk about the proposal that would seem to retreat from the measure's goals, cutting available funds for housing support by lowering the marginal tax on high-income households. But before we get to that, let's talk about some background on the measure. What are supportive housing services? What does this measure do? What has the measure accomplished so far?
Yeah, thank you so much, Fran. Thank you for the opportunity to talk with your audience. So let's just give a little background on the supportive housing services measure, what it is. So voters passed this measure in 2020, and the goal of this measure was acknowledging that beyond just the structure of a roof and a door to close, people need support to become housed and stay housed. And so that was the goal of the supportive housing services measure. And it is a 1% tax on high-income earning households and high-income earning businesses. So it's also marginal. So I really want to drive this home for your listeners. So the tax is, you don't pay this tax until you are an individual earning more than $125,000 a year, or a double filing tax household, a couple, making over $200,000. And for businesses, it's only income over $5 million. And what does marginal mean, right? Most of us don't, that is weird tax policy. Most regular folks are not paying attention to. So I want to break that down. So if you are an individual making $126,000 a year, you are paying the 1% tax for this, for SH, let's call it SHS from here on out, on $1,000 of your income. You're not paying 1% on the $125,000, only on the amount over that. So if you're surviving off $126,000 a year, you pay 1% on $1,000, which is $10 a year. So I know that there's a lot of talk out there that we're tax burden. Like Oregon doesn't have sales tax like a lot of other states. And so it relies heavily on income tax. But if we're just going to talk about this particular measure, this particular tax, this tax is not causing a burden. If it's costing an individual that lives off of $126,000 a year, is paying $10 a year to support homeless and housing services in our region, we all know $10 a year for someone at that income is not a burden. So this particular tax is not causing that overall tax burden that folks are feeling. And I think that's so important for us to uplift in this. So I'll also talk about, like, what has it accomplished so far, you asked? So voters passed this measure in 2020, but because it is an income tax, the money was actually not collected and starting to be dispersed until 2021. Right. So we've really only had this money in circulation to actually offer for housing and homeless services for 3 years, not very long. And we know it was like coming out of the pandemic and all the difficulties that that entail. But so in these 3 years that this money has been dispersed, the money has helped place nearly 7,000 households in housing, move out of homelessness. This is in all three counties. It has prevented 16,000 evictions. And it's also supplied almost 2,000 temporary shelter beds, or those pods that have become popular, either created new ones or sustained about 1,800. And then I also want to uplift something really exciting that this money is funding. And they're called RLA vouchers. It's an acronym that is for Regional Long-Term Rent Assistance. And so something a lot of folks listening might have be familiar with is the federal level housing voucher system we have, usually called Section 8. The official name is Housing Choice Vouchers, HCV program. And that is dispensed by our HUD, right? Our federal agency for housing. And those vouchers allow a household, right, the definition of affordable when it comes to housing, right, that our federal and many government agencies use, is that someone is not spending more than 30% of their total income on their housing costs. And so these vouchers actually allow that to happen, right? Like if you have a housing choice voucher, Section 8 voucher, you can shop around for an apartment. Let's say you find an apartment that costs $1,600 a month and 30% of your total income is $500, then you would pay $500 a month for that apartment, and the federal government would kick in the additional $1,100 to the landlord. So that's how those vouchers work. And then there's also vouchers in that same program that are attached to individual apartments, right? So you can't shop around for your own apartment with your voucher, but you can have that same subsidy that I just described in an apartment. And if you move out of that apartment, you lose that subsidy, right? That subsidy is only attached to that physical space, and whoever moves into that apartment next gets that subsidy. So those are the two federal ways. But the ARLA that the SHS funds are providing is a regional level, basically mirrors, not exactly the same, but very similar to that federal voucher program, which is so cool and exciting because this federal program has not kept pace with the need, right? And we hear about that. You've seen it in the news, right? Wait list, Home Forward, actually, which is Multnomah County's public housing authority, they opened their wait list for those vouchers just recently, last year, I believe. And they had 2,000 vouchers available, and they had about 20,000 people apply, throw their hat in. But yeah, the federal supply is not kept up with the need. And so the fact that voters and high-income earners are paying this tax here to produce a bucket of money that we can create our own local long-term rent assistance vouchers, that is phenomenal and beautiful, right? Because we know there are tons of folks that need long-term rent assistance, not just 3 months, get back on your feet, get working again, but our elderly, our neighbors experiencing disability that are not going to re-enter the workforce and deserve a home and deserve us to all chip in and keep them housed, right? So I just really want to uplift that. So the ARLA program, out of those 6,680 households that have been housed so far with SHS funds, 2,896 of those are through ARLAs. So 2,896 households are receiving long-term rent assistance with this funding. And this funding, this tax was passed with a sunset, meaning that no one would have to pay it anymore and the funding would all just dry up and go away in 2030. And so it was a 10-year tax. And that's really scary because now we have almost 3,000 households in our region living, feeling like, oh, I finally have stability. I can rely that, I'll have rent subsidy ongoing. And if this goes away, what happens to those 3,000 households? I even add more households to that mix if we don't have sufficient funding. So those are some of the accomplishments, and I'll stop there.
Well, so part of the reason that changes to this program are now being contemplated has to do with this sunset and wanting to extend it. Is that why there is now some movement toward making changes in the program?
So actually, I don't think it's so much about the sunset, although that is a dynamic. I think the reason that Metro started visiting this idea to make changes is that I'm sure many folks have seen in the news, right? This program has gotten a lot of press, bad press, because also there's more and more people homeless, right? So people aren't seeing the impact. We're paying all this tax, there's hundreds of millions of dollars, the counties aren't spending it effectively or efficiently, and there's still thousands of people in tents all over the sidewalk. I can see them every day. So I call BS that you're actually housing people with this money, right? They don't see the 16,000 people whose evictions were prevented that they would see out on the street. They don't see the almost 7,000 households that have housing now because of these funds, right? And so the other thing that I think it got a lot of bad press is that this tax collected around $100 million more dollars last year than expected, right? So financial analysts had predicted that this tax would bring in about $250 million a year. And it actually brought in $350 million a year last year. So that is wild to think about, right? Because this is a tax based on the more money that somebody earns, the higher their tax bill will be. So all this tells us is that the folks and the businesses at the very high end are doing so well that, that it 1% on that so well created $100 million more dollars than expected.
Wow.
And so I think that reality, coupled with the reality that in 2018, voters passed the Metro Affordable Housing Bond. And I'll even go so far back as to 2016. Before that, voters in the city of Portland passed the City of Portland Affordable Housing Bond. So those were the first of their kind in our region. And those, just to share with you the difference between a bond and like an income tax, a bond is paid back with property tax over a long extension of time, decades. Right, they're very common in education. So folks do talk about property taxes going up. But once again, I want to call out, if we're going to just focus on these individual, like housing is this and homelessness is this number one issue that we're all concerned about. But is it truly getting the level of investment that it deserves? And so the average homeowner pays about $10 a month to pay back the City of Portland Affordable Housing Bond and the Metro Affordable Housing Bond combined, right? Because they're very low rates, like 22 cents per $1,000 assessed value, right? So not a huge annual bill for to pay back these bonds. But these bonds also are an example. This isn't always true with government, but in this case it is. Of government spending money the way they said, and even doing a better job than they said. So, the Portland Affordable Housing Bond, all the money has been spent out, it's $253 million, and it created 500 more affordable apartments than originally projected or promised to voters. And then the Metro 2018 bond is on track to create over 5,000 homes, and that is about 1,200, 1,200 more affordable apartments and home ownership. Those funds are actually, some are going into creating affordable home ownership opportunities for folks in our region. So because these funds are running out, and they were like, maybe folks are not super excited about passing another property tax bond. The conversation Metro looked at, well, if this support, the SHS tax is raising $100 million more than expected, maybe we could spend some of this on housing because part of ending people's homelessness is the housing. And people won't be stabilized in their housing, right, if they can't afford it. So we need more of this regulated, affordable housing to end people's homelessness. So that I think is really the crux of why. And the last thing I'll say in that is the other reason is that an acknowledgement of a need for a better regional system, seeing the three counties kind of make different choices in how to spend the money, and Metro feeling like we are the government agency that's in charge of this technically, but we don't feel like we have much control over the regional plan. And we want a little more teeth, if you will, in like how we're responsible for this money and voters are holding us accountable, but we don't have a lot of say in how the money's being spent. And we would like a little more. So part of them revisiting changes is changing the governance to have more regionality in the way the counties get to spend the money.
So the sort of the two prongs motivating the idea of making changes in the measure are that we passed this measure, but we need to do more about this problem. Maybe there are ways we can tweak this to improve the situation, which would be even worse if it weren't for this measure, but we don't see that because it's so bad anyway. And then the other being that we've got three counties and they're getting money and there's the metro region and they're not all communicating, coordinating as well as might be desirable. So both governance and needing to provide more services, in fact, to people.
Right. And I can give a really concrete example of that. So, like, one of the things that Welcome Home advocated for in the better regional alignment, it's things in that would be like efficiency of contracting practices, right? Because what we hear from the community-based organizations actually trying to provide services to their community members that they have a closer touch to is, kind of, this county does it this way, this county does it that way. They're not all doing it the same way. They're not all prioritizing. And that puts, that can be very exhausting and cause a nonprofit to like spend way much more time than they would like to on like administrative stuff when they want to be spending their time helping people.
You are listening to the Old Mole Variety Hour on KBOO Portland. I'm Fran Michelle, and we'll be back in a minute with more of my conversation with Molly Hogan of the Welcome Home Coalition about Metro's supportive housing services.
Oh, I've got a home. I was rambling all around. Just a wandering worker. I go from town to town. And the police make me hard wherever I may go. I ain't got no home in this world anymore. My brothers and my sisters are stranded on this road. A hot, dusty road. Millions have gone. And the rich men took my home and drove me from my door. I ain't got no home in this world anymore.
That was Gina Galina performing Ain't Got No Home by Woody Guthrie. And before that, some of my conversation with Molly Hogan of the Welcome Home Coalition about Metro's supportive housing services measure and the good things it does. I'm Fran Michelle, and this is the Old Mole Variety Hour on KBOO Portland. We'll go back to my conversation with Molly Hogan in a minute. But first, I want to thank Joe Clement for bringing that version of Ain't Got No Home to my attention. Joe and the other moles, and so many other people I've had the good fortune to connect with through KBOO, are really important to me and to Portland. When I first moved here, KBOO was one of the places I found community. And I think about half my friends here in Portland are KBOO connections. KBOO puts the community in community radio. You can come meet some of the KBOO community in person on Friday and Saturday afternoons, December 13th and 14th, at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland, between 11 a.m. and 5 p.m. Find out how you can get involved. KBOO is powered by over 300 volunteers and has trained thousands of people how to make radio, all for free, thanks to the support we receive from members. 80% of KBOO's funding comes from members. So if you're one of the listener members who makes that possible, thank you. And if you're not yet, then please join us. You can become a monthly sustaining member, or you can make a one-time donation. You can click on the red Donate tab in the mobile app or on the website at kboo.fm, or you can mail a check to KBOO at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, 97214. Or come down in person this Friday or Saturday afternoon. Okay, let's return to my conversation with Molly Hogan of the Welcome Home Coalition about Metro's supportive housing services.
So there's a need for change to improve the program, maybe extend the program, the measure. And there is this proposal on the table now that would actually reduce that marginal tax rate, which might seem counterintuitive, right? I mean, we see that people are still houseless, people still need help. Why would we want to be collecting less money? Where has this proposal come from? I know the Welcome Home Coalition has some suggestions in their letter, but I think that's not the proposal that's under consideration at the Metro Council currently.
So the Metro Council has instructed staff to put together analysis on looking at reducing the marginal 1% tax rate on personal income taxpayers, right? So just to clarify that too, like the business tax, so it's a two-pronged tax, right? And the business tax is not on the table of discussion. It's the personal income. And that is brought forward recently. The Portland Metro Chamber of Commerce and Here Together Coalition, which is the campaign that passed the measure originally back in 2020, they sent a letter that they are presenting it to get together. To be clear, Portland Metro Chamber is a member of Here Together. So it's kind of like from the campaign, you know, from with this proposal to reduce the 1% marginal tax rate. And it's a call really, I think, coming from Portland Metro Chamber saying that wealthy households need tax relief and that there's too many, you know, I've heard it a lot, I've heard it in meetings, I've seen it in the news, like there's high income earners in the Portland Metro region have, there's a lot of high income earner taxes.
Well, that's where the money is.
Right. So that's, proposal to reduce the rate comes from this cry from Portland Metro Chamber to say, high-income earner households are tax burdened and we want tax relief. Like, we'll keep paying this. And actually, Parliamentary Chamber has been very supportive of, they want to see this money build affordable housing, which is a very, very expensive activity. So it doesn't make any sense to us to say, okay, hold on, we still haven't gotten the services part right, right? Like, there's been a big rally cry, and even Portland Metro Chamber sent a letter to Metro Council last year saying, you know, do better at contracting practices with SHS funds to allow nonprofit organizations to pay their frontline workers and homeless services better. Because we need a thriving, stable workforce to address homelessness, right? This is a people issue. And so it's people that are going to solve this issue. It's about those folks, those outreach workers, those peer support specialists, those case managers, meeting people where they're at. And a lot of those folks are making wages where they themselves could qualify for, you know, their wages qualify them for 60% area median income, subsidized housing. And so folks who are, I myself used to be a case manager, and I remember having a couple coworkers that were living in their car. They were living in their car and they were helping folks. They were paying other people's rent, but they couldn't get their own rent paid because they had a job and a paycheck. Wow. Right? So, like, the irony, the hypocrisy there, and the stress. It's like, it's the type of labor that's not valued, and it has to be valued if we are to, like, take this issue seriously, because it's emotional hard work. It takes a lot of flexible skills. Like, you have to have people skills. You have to be kind of like an uncertified therapist. You have to, like, you know, be good at bureaucracy, filling out paperwork, navigating systems, right? So the people in these positions are highly skilled. And you also have to have natural empathy and patience, because people aren't always on their best behavior when they're, like, in the experience and trauma that homelessness brings. And so these folks need to be paid, like, good quality wages, salaries, and we need to use this money to do that. And that still hasn't been done yet. And so that, and Portland Metro Chamber supports that. They acknowledge that. And so them saying in the same breath, let's reduce this pot of money and ask it to do more, I ask them, well, then how are we going to ever end up with living wages for frontline workers in this issue? How are we ever going to end up with the like true amount of housing that we need, subsidized housing? So it's like, it's not sensical, right? And my fear is reducing the pot of money and then asking it to do more is going to lead to more of not accomplishing the goals we hope to see. And then that is going to make everybody throw their hands in the air and say, well, see, this didn't work at all, so let's just not do it at all. And that's terrifying, because this issue deserves the quality investment. And that's part of why, you know, you hear a lot of folks say, like, housing first doesn't work. And I think it's so dangerous to say, you know, people say people aren't ready for housing. And what they mean when they say that truly is people aren't ready to regularly have to pay bills. People aren't ready to regularly do laundry again, right? They, like, these skills of being housed that maybe fall by the wayside when you are homeless, because being homeless is about survival and living every day and surviving, right? Feeding yourself, making sure you have enough warmth, shelter, meeting those basic survival needs. And so, yeah, maybe people don't remember how to pay a bill regularly and need that skill, but that doesn't mean that they're not ready for the safety of a roof, a door to lock, a bed to sleep in, a private bathroom, right? Everybody is ready for a home.
So to clarify, one of the forms of support that people getting supportive housing assistance can get is help with developing those skills that they need to remain housed.
Exactly. And we can't reduce that pot of money when the need for those supportive services are high. We haven't achieved them yet to the level that they are needed and deserving of. And the other thing is that we just know that housing people is more cost effective, right? So I just want to point out, can I uplift, like, one financial, like, comparison?
Sure.
The city of Portland, a few weeks ago, they had published their operating budget for fiscal year 25-26 for their temporary pod shelters, right? And that was for 723 units. And their operating budget was $40 million. So that's them spending about $55,000 per pod. And that is just a temporary, that's not permanent housing. That's still, those people are still homeless. So if we compare that to...
I would think that with $55,000 a year, somebody could find housing.
Right. Well, let me compare that for you to if you pay someone's rent at $1,400 a month, $1,400, plus give that household $5,000 for moving costs and other, then you're spending $22,000 a year for that household, right? Compare that to $55,000. I mean, that's $33,000 less. And then you can also then on top of that $22,000, you could pay for some case management support and still be less than $55,000 a year.
So right? Where is that other $30,000 going?
Gosh, that's a great question. And we'd have to, you know, let's ask current Portland City Council. I don't know.
I mean, another sort of financial comparison would be with the tax, as it were, recently raised on the Enhanced Services District downtown Clean and Safe, as it's called, which is also run by the Portland Metro Chamber or a subdivision of the Portland Metro Chamber, which I believe they just passed an 11% raise in the amount that people in that area will be paying, that property owners in that area will be paying for extra rent-a-cops and holiday decorations and for the Portland Metro Chamber to continue lobbying the city or administering whatever they're doing. So there seems to be a little disconnect there too, that a lot of money is being spent on pods and temporary housing and shelters that will not help people long-term. And there's a reluctance to tax people even the amount of, you know, a movie a month or a movie a year. If it's $10 a year, if you're making $126,000, is like, that's not even a movie ticket. Maybe a matinee. You could do a matinee for that. But as opposed to the amount of money that comes in when you pool all of that and could help people. So they don't want to maintain that 1% marginal rate, but they are okay with raising downtown residential homeowners tax. They don't call it a tax, I guess.
Right. It's a fee. Right. Definitely. Ooh. You're calling out like a hypocrisy there, right? Like this are saying there's a tax burden for high income earners, and at the same time, so we want to reduce this 1%, but we're going to actually advocate for an 11% increase, which effectively raises fees, which are basically taxes, are a fee on downtown residents and businesses. So there's a real like, that doesn't quite align with your other message that like taxes are too high, and so let's not increase them on on anybody. Yeah, and so I would love, we haven't even touched on that. Part of Welcome Home's, you know, rally cry right now is, okay, the proposal that Here Together in Portland Metro Chamber brought to Metro Council, and now Metro Council is doing analysis on their numbers that they're asking for. It's a 10% reduction in 2026, which would move the 1% to 0.9%, and then another further reduction in 2031 to 0.75%. And if you look at just what the 10% reduction, and this is based on Metro's own financial analysis staff, they said a 10% reduction this summer, they brought forward, you know, I took these numbers from their presentations. They said that would cause an estimated collective loss of around $17.5 million a year, right? And an example is for a household that's living off of $250,000 a year, that household currently pays $500 a year for this tax, right? Because they pay 1% on that $50,000 over the $200,000. So they pay around $41 a month. So if they move it to 0.9%, they will pay about $37 a month. So they'll save about $4 a month. This is a household living off $250,000 a year, but it would be a collective loss of an estimated $17 million. And $17 million could pay a lot of $22,000 a year per household to get some folks housed. It could do a lot to increase, to pay living wage to folks working in this industry to meet people where they're at. It could pay a lot for some recovery housing, for recovery services, right? People talk a lot about, yes, you know, drug addiction is a reality and mental health challenges are a reality. They are not, you know, they are contributing factors to people's homelessness. They're not the root cause. The root cause is like the cost of housing is too high, right? Lots of people experience addiction or mental health challenges and manage to stay housed through all of that because they have access to funding, money, or, you know, support, whether it's family or otherwise.
I would imagine that homelessness would drive one to take drugs as
exactly.
well.
Exactly. Yeah. And there's nobody, you know, there's studies of all over showing that correlation. And I mean, you know, all these housed folks having their glass of, you know, their few glasses of wine after their long day of work, like, go sleep outside in this 30 degree weather every night for a week and see how much wine you want to drink a night, right? Like, so can we tone down the judgment on folks' yeah. survival adaption skills? Really, it's adapting. Humans, we adapt, right? And part of adapting is like checking out, numbing when something is like too traumatizing, to seek comforting means, and drug addiction is a great comforting mean to like check out from this harsh reality that we've collectively created, honestly.
Yeah. Well, what can people do to help folks who make sure that there is support for people who need to get out of the cold and be able to have their glass of wine at home or not, because they'll be safe at home where it's warm and dry, to help those folks, to help the caseworkers who are living in cars get out of their cars and into housing, to the situation of our neighbors in the metro region? What can listeners do to support changes that will help this measure rather than buying the rich another trip to the movies or another latte?
Yeah, for sure. Well, I'd love for your listeners to go to our website, which is welcomehomecoalition.org. And if you look under recent news, we have a call to action. You can follow that call to action. We really want to flood Metro counselors' inboxes. Right now, we made it real easy. If you don't want to come up with what to write in your email, you can just hit the action button. Just take 2 minutes, go send that email to your Metro counselors. Let them know that you want to maintain the 1% marginal tax rate as it is, you know, and you want to see a better regional plan and implementation. You want to see some of the money be used to create housing that is truly regulated and affordable. And we also advocate for an elimination of the sunset, make it a permanent tax. You know, if that's not politically feasible, then ideally a minimum of 25 years so that this money could be used and leveraged with enough time that it can really be spent wisely and effectively. We don't have the kind of money that the Portland Metro Chamber has and can promise to like fund a future voter ballot campaign, but we have people power and we need to show the Metro Council that we have people power. You know, if you are a payer of this tax, please include that in your email. Add a little sentence like, hey, I pay this tax and you don't need to reduce taxes on me. And we're also going to be putting out a call to action to go testify at the future Metro Council meeting. I don't know the date yet, but it should be sometime in mid-December. They plan to refer a new ballot measure by January. So love to have people come out if you're comfortable with that style and offer public comment about why you don't need the tax lowered. We need all the money we can get. We didn't even say this in this conversation, but particularly because, you know, folks are talking about incoming Trump administration and what that will mean for federal money. And, you know, our federal resources here in Oregon could potentially really be threatened and be shrunk, you know, because Oregon has progressive policies and maybe we'll be, quote unquote, punished for that. So we need to, like, make sure we're shoring up all our regional revenue, that it's as robust as possible, because this issue is not going to go away. And what's more is that we know that this administration will give tax cuts to wealthy households, as we saw in 2016. So for all the wealthy households out there, thank you so much for paying this tax locally. You're going to get some cuts federally. And so you don't need another one locally, right? Like, if you believe in that, please go to our website and sign on and take action. And thank you so much for this opportunity to share this news.
Thank you so much for talking with us and telling us about this. We will put up on the webpage at kboo.fm the information, links to your site where people can have an easy way to contact Metro Council and let them know that we're paying attention and We don't need this tax lowered. We've previously reported on the myths about taxation that, in fact, people in Oregon do not pay unusually high taxes. People in Portland do not pay unusually high taxes when you add it all up. So this is needed to make things a little fairer and get a few more people into housing where they can stay. Thank you so much for your work, Molly Hogan. And we will keep watching and we will keep tracking this issue. Thanks so much.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Fran. And thank you all for listening. Take good care.
That was Tax the Rich by The Craze. And before that, you heard me talking with Molly Hogan of the Welcome Home Coalition about Metro's supportive housing services. I just want to emphasize a few points on this topic. The Portland Metro region does not have particularly high taxes, and we are not alone in facing an escalating housing crisis. Molly comments on the danger that inadequate funding for SHS will be used as an excuse to give up completely on the program. And that's a pattern we've seen elsewhere. Public services are starved of needed funds and then declared to have failed. The housing crisis is not the fault of the skilled, smart, hardworking people who are living in their cars because their crucial work is not paid enough to cover rent. It's not the fault of those who are old or disabled or traumatized by the experience of houselessness. And the solution is not to cut taxes on the wealthy. Quite the opposite. We need more public investment and more progressive taxation. The Institute for Policy Studies and Popular Democracy released a report in October titled Billionaire Blowback on Housing: How Concentrated Wealth Disrupts Housing Markets and Worsens the Housing Affordability Crisis, in which they argue that much of the problem lies in the concentration of wealth and private capital's predatory investment and wealth parking in luxury housing. Street Roots has also reported on this pattern in Portland of investors driving up housing prices. That may be why there are areas of the inner city in Portland where housing vacancy rates approach 40%. Check out that call to action at welcomehomecoalition.org and let the Metro Regional Council know what you think. You are listening to the Old Mole Variety Hour on KBOO Portland. I'm Fran Michelle, and this is KBOO's Catalog of Connections year-end campaign to raise $75,000 by the end of December. Thank you to all the listener members who make KBOO possible. Less than 10% of listeners are members, but if you aren't yet a member, you can join by going to kboo.fm/give or by texting KBOO to 44321. And if you already support KBOO and you can increase your membership level even by $1 a month, please do. We need to maintain the equipment and update the website and pay the staff a living wage, and so please redistribute resources as you can. We turn now to a commentary from Desiree Heliger's, reflecting on the season of consumerism and colonialism.
I don't know about you, but personally, the whole festive holiday thing seems to be falling a bit flat this year. I mean, don't get me wrong, like every other year, I do plan to really go to town on a pumpkin pie or two. But this year, the annual deluge of Black Friday ads egging us on to higher levels of consumption with corresponding carbon emissions and solid and liquid waste seem particularly hollow, morbid, predatory even. Falling as Black Friday did this year on November 29th, the date the UN first recognized in 1977 as the International Day of Solidarity with the Palestinian People. This year, all the excess, the forced pageantry, and planned obsolescence of Black Friday seems in such stark and ironic contrast to the poverty in Gaza. Winter's coming to Gaza, where hundreds of thousands of shell-shocked people are struggling against all odds to care for themselves and their families. From infants to elders and recent amputees on crutches and in wheelchairs, as well as people with other disabilities, eking out lives in the streets, tents, and precarious ruins of shelled-out apartments. In The Guardian, Camille Ahmed and Ana Lucia Gonzalez-Paz describe Gaza as a sonic hellscape, filled variously with, quote, incessant buzzing of drones and more violent intrusions, Israeli missile strikes, sirens, gunfire, and the screams of frightened people, unquote. And the situation is unlikely to get better under Herr Trump. the man who, as president, moved the U.S. Embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, stands to personally profit from, as reported in The Guardian, investment his son-in-law Jared Kushner has in the removal of Palestinians from Gaza and the development of Gaza as an Israeli waterfront resort. And no doubt Trump is also aware of the profits to be had from exploiting Gaza's offshore marine gas fields. But if Jewish-led protests at the Thanksgiving Day parade in New York City, and more recently in the Canadian Parliament, are anything to go by, solidarity actions against the unfolding genocide in Gaza are likely to continue to build in the run-up to Hanukkah and the January inauguration. But in the lead-up to the lighting of the White House Christmas tree, Joe Biden seems as willing as ever to continue the seemingly limitless supply of U.S. weapons to help annihilate Gaza. I'm just speculating here. So please, sir, do not put me to the dunking stool. But Jesus himself might have been first to observe that giving birth in a manger sounds pretty idyllic right now to women in Gaza weakened by hunger. Giving birth in the rubble of buildings that used to be apartments, universities, and hospitals. No sterile sheets, no antiseptic, nothing to dull the pain. Nothing to stop the next forced removal, the next relocation. The Palestinian Trail of Tears. The links between Native American and Palestinian experience being so many and so obvious, it seems fitting that the International Day of Solidarity with Palestinian people follows so closely on the heels of Thanksgiving. That annual rite of colonial simulacra on such a spectacular national level that Walt Disney himself might have been proud to call it his brainchild. We're talking about a holiday that begins indoctrinating American schoolchildren from kindergarten onward into a history that never was. And for all of you teachers out there, I'd be remiss for not noting that for decades, Rethinking Schools and the Zinn Education Project have been developing K-12 curriculum that centers Native voices, culture, and history, and goes a long way toward puncturing those myths. Still, far too many Americans remain unaware of the fact that since 1970, the fourth Thursday in November also has been recognized as a national day of mourning, heralding as it does the arrival of settlers bent on claiming the land as their own. In the pithy words of the late 19th century colonial hymn, "From sea to shining sea," today we hear the echo of that much celebrated American phrase in Netanyahu's and the Likud party's longstanding vision of a Jewish state purged of Palestinians, one that extends, quote, between the sea and the Jordan River, unquote. Accumulation by dispossession is how Marxist geographer David Harvey describes the logic of capitalism, which is inextricably linked to colonialism. Throughout history, indigenous people from Palestine to the U.S. have been on the front lines of dispossession and removal. Their lands drowned or exploited for hydropower or contaminated in service of the empire, whether by mine tailings and nuclear waste or bombs, bullets, or other forms of military ordnance. And the same hard-hit communities are now on the front lines of climate collapse, disproportionately hit by rising sea levels, by typhoons, hurricanes, tornadoes, and other extreme weather events. What was it anyway that Martin Luther King Jr. said in his 1967 Riverside Church speech about the triple evils of militarism, racism, and materialism, and how they intersect? And would he be surprised today by products moving at the speed of light? Millions of us wrapping our arms daily around boxes that many contend are stamped with the image of Jeff Bezos' male member. What would MLK have said about Bill Gates injecting markets and mines into the Democratic Republic of Congo, about corporations and militaries jonesing after cobalt, after tantalum, after tin, tungsten, uranium, and gold, after debts and interest, after the bodies of children, bodies of water, bodies of workers wearing flip-flops into mines? The world has no shortage of political prisoners or of environmental martyrs and heroes. But 80-year-old Leonard Peltier, a Lakota and Anishinaabe AIM member, is arguably the most famous. The legal lynching he underwent so outrageous and his incarceration in a maximum security prison so protracted. Even former FBI agents have themselves essentially contended that Peltier was scapegoated by the FBI for the lethal shooting of two agents, Jack Kohler and Ronald Williams, on the Pine Ridge Reservation. Michael Apted's 1992 documentary Incident at Oglala, narrated by Robert Redford, is a good place to start if you're new to this history. But if you're looking for insights into the role that uranium mining played in the conflict, you'd be better off checking out Peter Mathiasen's book, In the Spirit of Crazy Horse, Leonard Peltier and the FBI's War on the American Indian Movement. For a firsthand account of Peltier's life, check out his memoir, Prison Writings, My Life is My Sundance. Despite well-documented prosecutorial misconduct, powerfully depicted in Apted's documentary, Peltier's conviction has yet to be overturned. And in the face of decades of global, high-profile pleas for clemency for Peltier, including by James Reynolds, a senior U.S. attorney who was involved in his prosecution, no president up until now has been willing to free Peltier. Given that he's in increasingly poor health, time is running out, and the same president who just pardoned his own son may be Peltier's last shot at clemency. If you've not done so, check out the Amnesty International petition, as well as Amy Goodman and Dennis Moynihan's recent column making the case for his release. The Red Nation Media Collective also has an extensive playlist of podcasts focused on Peltier's case and the long struggle to free him. So this holiday season, be sure to take a few minutes to join your voice to the chorus of voices calling for Leonard Peltier to be freed at last. This has been Desiree Helligers for the Oldman Variety Hour.
I thank God for all the outlaws that went and did the world some good. This old world could use good trouble. We ought to do as Leonard would. We have broken every treaty, disavowed them from the start, causing hardship with indifference and a cage around our hearts. We write doctrines of injustice, which we sanctify as law. We incarcerate their warriors for doing right. They take the fall. In a run-down Florida prison, Leonard Peltier's doing time. 45 long years and counting, though he's guilty of an old familiar story. Truth against the FBI. Locked up warrior lives his Sundance. Little Sam's called in alive. I thank God for all the outlaws that went and did the world some good. This old world could use good trouble. We ought to do as Leonard would. We've defiled their mountains, chiseled faces in the stone. Our belligerent dead presidents ever looming o'er their home. When their youth rose up in protest and demanded dignity, Uncle Sam took aim on groundless blame, sneering with impunity. Nowadays, Sam's building pipelines to contaminate our wells. He's got legal aid from billionaires and a lot of cash.
has to sell. But courageous folks like Leonard put their freedom on the line, guided by the great creator. They break Sam's law so we survive. I thank God for all you outlaws out there do the world some good. This old world could use good trouble.
That was Joe Troop singing Free Leonard Peltier. And before that, Desiree Heliger's on the connections between the International Day of Solidarity with the Palestinian people and the National Day of Mourning and the need to free Leonard Peltier. You have been listening to the Old Mole Variety Hour on KBOO Portland. I'm Fran Michel, and this is KBOO's Catalog of Connections year-end campaign to raise $75,000 before the end of the year. You can connect with us by becoming a member and giving to KBOO. So please go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321 or click the red donate box in the mobile app or snail mail your paper check to KBOO at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, 97214. And if you're already a member, thank you. Thank you for helping to keep the lights on and the equipment working and the staff housed. Thanks to all the members and volunteers and staff at KBOO who keep us connected. Thanks to today's contributors to the Old Mole Variety Hour. Thanks to Molly Hogan of the Welcome Home Coalition for talking with me about the need to support supportive housing and for telling us about their call to action at welcomehomecoalition.org. Thanks to Desiree Heligers for her commentary on nuclear colonialism and the need to free Leonard Peltier. Thanks to Joe Clement for playing our theme song and sharing banjo knowledge. Thanks to all the moles, and thanks to you for listening. The Old Mole will be back next Monday with more views, reviews, and interviews. Stay tuned now to KBOO for Locus Focus. We'll go out with Mavis Staples reminding us we are in it together.
We're all in it together. Every boy and every girl. We've all got to get it together. Everybody in the world. I gave up on hating you just for hating me. I gave up on hating you a long time ago. I need you. You need me. Now we're all in it. To get it right, we've all got to get it together. Everybody's on the same side. I
have some gravy in your ear. This is Wavy Gravy, Temple of Accumulated Error and Voice of Woodstock, telling you you are listening to KBOO Portland at 90.7 FM. The 90s are the 60s, standing on your head.